Bienvenue au terrain des jeux. Nous sommes ici à jouer au basketball. Il va vous conduire à la victoire. Comme un moment de grand effort. Et l'esprit du ballon qui vit en tous les monts. Et l'esprit qui ne meurt jamais. Parce que basketball, oui, basketball a arrivé. Jouer.
Welcome to BizCast Ball, the Biscuitball BizCast. My name is Corbin Smith. This weekend, before the slam dunk competition-ish, the afternoon of that day, I spoke to Ethan Sherwood Strauss. Ethan is a NBA writer for ESPN. We talked about the Warriors and some other stuff. Enjoy. I'm here with Ethan Sherwood Strauss. Ethan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. This is a lovely cafe that we're in. It's calming my nerves while somehow spiking them with caffeine. It's great.
Now, your nerves, we are in New York City.
Yes.
New York.
Yes, yes.
And it's horrible, right?
Hey, we were talking about that off mic. I didn't know that we would actually share that, and I think we might be surrounded by New Yorkers, although we are in the middle of Manhattan, in Midtown Manhattan, so the chances are that there isn't a New Yorker within 2 miles.
I think everybody in this room is covering All-Star Weekend.
That is probable. That's probably true. Look, if you love New York, if you love New York, if you live in New York and you love it, I can't tell you you're wrong. I can't. I just know it's not for me. I feel the weather is bad. You walk everywhere, and it's great that it's walkable, but that means you're experiencing
that's great.
All
that
the
is,
bad weather.
That is by far the best part about it, is that you can go anywhere without a car.
That is fantastic. You know, I applaud that because in theory I care about the environment, in theory. But
here's the other thing.
Yeah.
They also litter.
Yes.
Everywhere. There's litter everywhere.
We can say it's dirty. It's dirty. The city is dirty. It's gray. There's no nature other than the contrived nature of places like Central Park.
I want to talk about Central Park.
Okay, let's do it.
First day I got here, I was like, I feel terrible. There's no trees here.
Uh-huh.
And somebody said, go to Central Park. And I went and I was like,
I live in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, there's trees every. Like, I live nestled in the heart of mountains. I live near trees.
Yeah.
I went to college next to an actual forest that I would walk in every day. And somebody says, just go to Central Park.
Well, you know, the thing Central Park does have, it has one of the best collections of birds for bird watching of anywhere. But it's not because this is a paradise of nature. It's because there's no nature for miles and miles. So to not die, all these birds just zero in on the one speck of green they can find. And that's why there are so many birds. So there is an advantage to this urban hellscape, which I should add has a lot of great food, great culture, low crime.
The bread is great.
Yeah.
That bread thing, that's real.
Yeah, yeah. Very good bread, very good water. But I sort of hate it. And I also hate the self-pathologizing they do. You're seeing a lot of it from, you know, Spike Lee. I'll blame him. It's his fault. He's the one who mythologizes New York.
Okay.
Nobody else.
Just him.
Just him. Maybe some other people. And I feel like we've been tricked. We've been tricked for years. Because I would watch Sex and the City. It's always 70 degrees, and they're drinking mimosas. They're eating brunch. And it's not like that. It's not like that at all.
No.
It's actually quite dreadful outside. It's more like England, or how I'd imagine England, which I haven't been to.
I've never been either.
Yeah, I'd never dare.
This is the furthest east I've ever been in my entire life.
Wow.
I saw the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, wow.
It's cool that there's a different ocean here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I appreciate
that.
But
let's be real. Like,
it's not as good.
Yeah, the Pacific Ocean's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, maybe the Caribbean's pretty cool. Look, and I don't want to make any New York fans of your podcast mad. Again, if you are from here, if you love it here, I can't tell you you're wrong. It's very subjective. I just feel like you're leading, that you've deluded yourself in the life. That's all I'm saying.
I think you're so disconnected from the heart of nature and from yourself.
Yes.
That you're just like, well, this is nature, right? Like,
your
body is readapted.
Mm.
If you go into a real forest, you'll probably cry.
Yeah, well, this happened to me. I lived here for a year when I worked for the NBA, NPR.
You just did PR?
It was terrible. It was awful. I guess I should be happy for the opportunity or what have you, but I worked around 7 days a week, woke up 4 a.m., That's how I got interested in basketball writing, because my job was to effectively read all the basketball writing on the internet around 2008 and then send memos to David Stern and people like that.
Did you just, like, was it just a, were you trying to do PR somewhere else? Was it just a coincidence?
No, it was just, I graduated from college. I didn't know what I was going to do, and it was sports, and it was the NBA, and I moved here like a cliche idiot who does that after college and needed something, and then the whole stock market melted. In fall of 2008,
you weren't gonna quit.
So, and the thing about working in sports is there's somebody who's always willing to take your job because it's sports and go sports, even if it's not the best.
One of the most fascinating subplots is, I think, to the beginning of the analytics movement is that, like, people who are entirely overqualified, who can make tons of money in another field, take huge hits just to work.
It's the irony. If they were really looking at analytics and looking at market inefficiencies, they wouldn't be working in sports.
They'd be
going for something else, something far more fulfilling.
Fulfilling, but got more money.
Yeah, but I remember in the winter coming back, and I'm from San Diego, so I'm ill-equipped to deal with any of this. But I come back to visit home in the winter, and I remember getting on the BART train, going out to around where my mom lives in Concord, California, and just seeing the green hills. And I'm gesticulating, which doesn't help on a podcast, but I am gesticulating green hills, and my eyes were pressed up against the glass because I just hadn't seen green in months. I hadn't seen it. I was out in Brooklyn, and it was just... Wow, I've been missing this, and my body has been readapting, but it was a shock to see it. The weather apparently matters. It's a thing. It's, no wonder people talk about it in conversations. I didn't know growing up in San Diego, but there is a reason people bring up the weather in conversations.
Where I'm from, it just rains every day. How's the weather? It rains.
That's the homeostasis, the rain.
I haven't seen any rain. I mean, it's been so cold.
Oh, God. It's funny, I got on an elevator with John McEnroe and Chris Mullen. Not like we got on together, not like we were laughing it up together.
We're not friends with John McEnroe.
Yeah, I'm not friends with John McEnroe and Chris Mullen. I just happened to be in the elevator. And these are two archetypal New Yorkers, New Yorkers with accents. And, of course, what were they complaining about? They were complaining about the weather and how they couldn't live here. And Mullen's like, ugh, cuts right through you. and I thought... That's very eloquent in a way. It does. Right now it is so cold that you feel any part of it on your body and it cuts right through you.
My friends have a beautiful view from their roof in Brooklyn, but the roof is frozen and I'm scared to go up there because I think I'll slide around and fall off and die.
That would be embarrassing. You know.
Yeah, I think I would be more concerned about dying than being embarrassed.
I see, I'm always concerned about dying in embarrassing ways. I think about that. I fixate on it. I don't want people... at my funeral to be... I know I'm dead, and I know so in theory...
You
I'm
don't
not,
want people to say, oh, we miss Ethan so much, but
what
can
a
you
dumbass.
Believe me?
I don't want a bunch of jokes to be made at my expense and my eulogies.
Can you believe he got eaten in his underpants by a bear? Unbelievable.
Who gets drunk and, you know, runs into a zoo enclosure? I mean, come on. This is completely ridiculous.
Do you think about running into zoo enclosures?
Well, I'm just trying to come up with a death that would be fairly... You know, fairly embarrassing. I guess people wouldn't laugh at you if you fell off a roof. People would be fairly sympathetic.
Yeah.
You know.
Like people might even be like, this is a problem. We need to deal with icy roofs.
Yeah. Ooh, you could be the impetus for reform. You wouldn't die in vain then. That would be good. Yeah.
Man, I should fall off a roof.
Yeah, if you really were selfless.
If I want to change the world.
So many more safety.
I would give up basketball writing. And I would fall off a roof.
I think that's quotable. That's a good yearbook model.
I'm in so many yearbooks.
Should we talk about basketball?
Yeah.
Is that
Yeah. We'll get to it.
Okay.
You cover the Warriors more or less, or you're a national writer, but you live. Yeah. Long, you know.
My bailiwick is the Warriors.
Yeah.
I think is the term that the players use. That's the cool lingo, right? Bailiwick.
Yeah. Sure.
That's my thing. That's my focus right now.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
What the hell?
They're really good. And I feel kind of, I'm sorry, I half blow my nose because I've gotten sick because I'm weak right now.
No problem. Look, it's authentic.
Yes, it's very real.
Do you think that you got a disease from New York?
Probably, and what you're hearing right now live, well, you know, it's not live at the time you're listening to it. You're hearing me making you sick. You're hearing the transference of disease.
Well, I wear glasses. I never get sick. I wear glasses.
Well, we'll see.
I think.
This is a challenge. This is obviously a challenge. Yeah, they're really good, and I feel as though I'm falling into a very fannish mentality of there should be a bit more praise. There should be a bit more respect for what they're doing.
I mean, because it's not like normal good.
Yeah.
Is the thing. Is that it's not like it's not abnormal.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. It's amazing, amazing.
It's
they're murdering people.
It's the best point differential through all these games since the Chicago Bulls of Michael Jordan. You know, and so it's odd to me. And maybe you can tell me this. Maybe you can be rational and reasonable at it. I see James Harden as a legitimate MVP candidate, somebody that a reasonable person could say is an MVP or should be the MVP if we're deciding it right now. But would that be the case if the Warriors played in the Central time zone or if they played in the Eastern time zone? Because I remember Derrick Rose, worst season, worst team, being nearly the consensus MVP, and it just seems to me that this must be partially a function of the team being on late, and I hate being that insecure West Coast, you don't pay attention to us, but I just feel like that's a dichotomy.
The games are on so late. It didn't occur until I was here, and I wanted to watch a game, a Blazer game or whatever, and it's like
it's like you have to feel like you're some sort of drug addict to watch your team play.
You have to have a problem.
Or to be in the restaurant industry and have odd times, but most people in the restaurant industry do have a drug problem, so I guess it does.
Wow.
You know.
Wow, that was probably the hottest take I've ever heard in my entire life.
Well, you know, I'm going to pass it off on Anthony Bourdain. It's Spike Lee's fault the New York self-mythologizes, and it's Anthony Bourdain's fault that people think chefs are drug addicts. So, you know.
There's talk about the Heat, which was about Mario Batali. Mario Batali doing cocaine out of pizza boxes.
And Andrew Zimmern used to rob ladies of their purses of Bizarre Foods fame. He lived in New York, and he would talk about being in Midtown and just shaking old women down and just grabbing their stuff.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Or, you know what did that to him?
What?
New York. He needs nature.
He lives in Minnesota now, Andrew Zimmern does. So
that I can't handle either.
You can't handle that? Just too cold?
I've probably told this. I went once. I stayed with a friend. I went to sleep. She lives in like a suburb. I wake up. I go outside. And I just see like a row of houses that all look exactly the same sky.
Yeah.
Forever. And I was on an alien planet. It freaked me out.
I haven't been. I haven't been to nearly anywhere in the Midwest. I went to Cleveland for a wedding. I don't have a glowing review of that city. I'll spare it. You know, I've shit enough on New York that I shouldn't get another city mad at me. But that's really the only Midwest city I've ever been to.
Just Minneapolis. Oh, I went to Madison too.
Okay.
Madison's nice.
Yeah. From what I hear, that's.
But anyway, it's incredibly, unbelievably good offense. Are they one in both? Are they tops in both?
They're second in offense and first in defense by a good margin. Offensively, they're not as super talented, and they're not as high-powered as people believe they are.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is Steph, and a lot of it is Clay, with the majority of it being Steph.
But everybody else is...
They pass well. Everybody else passes well, but they've got a dearth of shooting, where you're seeing teams help off Iguodala more. You're seeing teams help off Draymond when they can. And so I think... There are these headlines of what the Warriors are as this incredibly explosive, fun-to-watch offense, and there's an element of truth to it, but I think there's an overselling of their talent. I think I would disagree with Matt Moore on this, who thought that the Nash and let me cough. that made good pod, good radio. We're Matt.
It's Ethan, it's authentic.
It's very, it's real. Look, you know what? That's why we're in New York. It's because people in the West Coast are soft and fake and superficial, and people here, it's gritty and it's reality.
Yeah.
So, it's perfect.
You are the only other person, other than myself, I've seen wearing a raincoat on top of flares.
I think it's because we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah. I sat in the thing and I was like, everybody's wearing wool coats.
Yeah. I don't own one of those. Like, why would I?
I own one, but I didn't bring it. It's big.
I mean, yeah, it's a big old inconvenience.
Yeah. Bring two sweaters and a raincoat.
I'm losing stuff every time I walk into a building and walk out because I'm just losing track of which layers I'm taking off. My gloves are in some bar in Williamsburg that I probably don't even remember going to.
I found a pair of gloves on the street and started wearing them.
Oh, those are mine.
Oh, good.
I would like my gloves back now.
Sorry, I left them somewhere.
Oh, damn it.
They're with Eric Gunderson. Sorry.
But yes, the offense, they move the ball side to side. They try to do Spurs-style motion. They share it. It's nice. It's fun. I worry a little bit about their level of talent offensively, but that's what you do at this point of the year.
Yeah.
You just look at whichever team and go, what is their Achilles heel?
They're so good. Like, they're so good.
Yeah.
Like, when you said that, I thought, what?
Yeah. Well, it's relative to if you have to invent a concern, other than Bogut might get hurt, that would be the concern. It would be maybe the talent on offense.
Who could beat them in a playoff series?
The Spurs. The Spurs are the big team to fear because they have Danny Green, who can guard Steph, and they have Kawhi Leonard, who took Klay Thompson out of that series when those two teams faced. That was a long time ago, of course. But that would be the team, that would be the biggest team to fear despite their struggles. Oklahoma City just has to be respected because they're Oklahoma City.
Because Durant's so good.
They've got, yeah, they've got incredible talent. Apart from that, you know, I hear the Grizzlies brought up a bunch, and I just can't help but feel that's because they played on national TV and the Grizzlies won, and that's informing.
I was thinking the Grizzlies, and I feel like track record over a period of years,
they did beat
the Grizzlies
them a lot.
Have tend to have their number since they've been good.
And they do have that thing, too, where they have Conley for Curry, Tony Allen for Klay, and so they can guard them, but I just wonder, how are the Grizzlies going to, I know they're a top 10 offense right now, but how are they going to score against the Warriors, which isn't really what people think about or worry about. It's just this more old basketball versus new basketball. They're going to pound them down low, and, you know, one team is... I feel that there's a contingent of basketball fans, less so than writers, and basketball pundits who love the Grizzlies for not being part of what's going on.
I love the Grizzlies.
I love them, but I don't want to conflate that with they're going to succeed.
Okay.
Yeah, you know.
A thing with the emergence of statistical thinking in the NBA, mm-hmm. and especially spatial statistical thinking, is I think that there's a worry amongst a lot of people that we're reaching a point of basketball, that we're reaching a point of convergence.
Yeah. The basketball singularity? What does this
mean?
If you
will. Yeah. Well, like the NFL, every NFL offense runs more or less similarly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that we're getting to a point where every offense is going to be motion or SSNR. Spread screen and blah, 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 blah. Spread screen. It's going to be motion and or spread screen and roll.
Yeah.
And if you aren't doing that, you're a moron.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Grizzlies represent a team that's not doing that. And like, even I intellectually understand that it's not.
I just want to butt in.
Useful, but go ahead.
The people listening can't see this, but what just happened is that two women sat down to get coffee and have a nice conversation with each other together, looked at us with this microphone, were horrified, and then went to the other table.
They were horrified?
I think they were horrified by us and whatever we were doing.
Oh, wow.
I think it was a look of,
I mean, it's
who
not,
are these people? Why are they doing this?
It's not normal. Well, you have a credential.
Thank God. Okay. Yeah, that, because in New York, we just as easily could have been crazy people talking into a microphone for no reason.
Yeah, about conspiracies.
Yeah, yeah. So you like the change. You feel as though it's getting homogenized, and you love the Grizzlies.
I don't necessarily think it's definitely.
Is this all part of you trying to trick yourself into thinking LaMarcus Aldridge is fun? Is this? Part
oh,
of
I don't think LaMarcus Aldridge is fun.
Okay.
Other people do.
Okay.
When the Blazers were bad that one year, I was like, I wanted them to trade Aldridge so bad. And then they got good again, and it's like...
I guess he's here.
Yeah, great.
It's like, I'm trying to think, what would be the analogy in life to this? What would be the analogy to keeping someone or something around because it's turned out well? Is it staying married for the kids? What is it?
Well,
LaMarcus Aldridge got pregnant in this analogy, or did you get pregnant?
I got LaMarcus Aldridge pregnant. And now we're just here together. And maybe he'll leave.
And you know, it's not there aren't any arguments, no loud arguments, just a quiet resentment, you know.
Yeah. Like, oh, another along too.
The kids are starting to think it's weird that you sleep in separate beds, but you know, they're getting a good education and they get the solid influence.
Look, when the kids are gone, we'll hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, either we're stuck or we're in a paradigm shift.
I feel that with the Grizzlies. I like that they're different.
I like that they're different, and I worry that maybe there won't be space for different teams.
Yeah.
It's with Jackson, it was hard not to watch the Warriors under Jackson and not think like, what are they doing? This is a terrible idea.
It was kind of fun though to just see Steph going one on five sometimes with no plan, and I think that's why
we need to really work on these Klay Thompson post ups.
Oh yeah,
he's into the next Jordan.
Well, I think that's why those guys loved him. The guys who did. Not everybody did. There were players who hated Jackson. But the ones who loved him because you just got to do whatever you wanted to do. It was very structureless, which, if you're an NBA player and you're empowered and the coach likes you, that can be a lot of fun if you don't practice and there are no plays. So that was a lot of the backing for him, quite frankly.
But, so I don't know. It was weird because I would just watch the Warriors and think, well, this isn't working. But what's... They'll just look like every other, like every team is going to look the same eventually. And
yeah, so you liked the lack of structure. Like, you're
I don't know if I didn't like watching the Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
Under in that scheme, but at the same time, they represented somebody doing something different.
Yes.
Which, and look, this has nothing to do with like playing well or strategically. Like, they obviously should have been running a spread screen.
Yeah.
I would watch them play the Blazers. And and Lillard, yeah, he's better this year, but he just gets screened, man.
Like, he used to take a very long way around screens.
Or just die. into the screen and sort of slide down like a bug. But
that's something that we don't know as observers. We don't know what that feels like. I think about that sometimes, where how hard is it to get around those screens?
How's the hardest you've been screened in pickup?
I've been screamed pretty hard, but never so hard that I specifically remember it happening.
I've gotten like a little winded.
Yeah.
Like, I've gotten the wind knocked out of me.
My thing is I get more knocked down on layups. That happens to me a lot. And I pump fake. I've got this sort of terrified pump fake that I can't even control. I think it's just fear-based.
It's too powerful?
Well, it's... A, too powerful.
Okay.
B, it's so reflexive that it's not a plan. I think it's just a hiccup. It's like a hitch in a golf swing, but that makes it very effective, and that gets people falling on me and also hating me, and then more inclined to hit me. So that more than any sort of screen, and I'm not trying to play defense anyway. So,
oh, no.
Yeah. So that's more of a problem.
I try because I'm so bad.
I mean, I do have a scar... on my eye from where I got elbowed incredibly hard from one of those pump fakes.
This one?
Yeah. I've got a little Egyptian makeup.
Yeah.
That's from that. So,
Lillard,
so the people telling me that I've never touched a basketball in my life, I have. I don't have any credentials beyond that.
So Lillard would just get screened. Curry was open immediately over the key, and he would hit a three. And I would be like, oh my god, I hope they don't figure out that they should just keep doing that.
And that was a game last year where Lee got benched and Draymond was not starting. And Draymond went in and the Warriors went on this big run and it was the start of maybe Lee should be benched. Draymond, and that was against the Blazers, and the Warriors were running four out, high pick and roll, with Lopez not knowing quite what to do on
those
high
screens.
This
is last year or this year?
It was last year.
Okay.
It was last year.
Last season, okay.
Yeah. And that was sort of a marker of maybe the Warriors should always play this way. Of course they didn't, you know.
No. And they would do it three times in a row, and I would be like,
oh no, this is the killer app.
Yeah, but they would always go away from it,
yeah.
And I would think like... All right, and the Blazers won eventually. So
yeah,
but yeah. So Jackson was weird.
Yeah, he's a strange guy. You know, I try to convey that since he works for my company, but he's undeniably strange. I think we can all.
He's very idiosyncratic.
Yes, we can all admit that he is an odd fellow, and what happened there was very strange.
Are most Are there successful NBA coaches who are odd?
Yeah, not maybe not Jim Harbaugh level of odd.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that guy's a weirdo. He's a total weirdo.
Yeah.
I'd say Phil Jackson's strange, yes. Would you say he's strange?
He's strange, but he's very contained.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
I would say Rick Pitino seems like a weird guy.
Yeah.
Or Calipari to a dude. Calipari maybe not.
This gets into the issue of the word weird, and Peter King gets shit on a lot for this, but the word weird is fairly hard to peg down. You know, I can't define weird.
Well, can you define eccentric?
I can only define it with synonyms of itself.
Okay.
Uncanny, odd, strange, bizarre.
hard to get along with.
Doesn't fit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are there NBA coaches who are?
I feel like Ron Adams is like that for the Warriors as an assistant.
This is their defensive assistant. Yeah. This is their unbelievable defensive
assistant. Their guru guy, where he's this old Buddha of a man who speaks slowly and quotes history and says Michelangelo, and he says something about Michelangelo's quote about improving yourself. I feel that he is incredibly idiosyncratic in this ecosystem.
But he's like a career assistant.
Yeah. Like, I don't think he wants it.
Kerr, in contrast to Jackson, seems very
management.
Very man. He looks like the man.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. We would envision Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else would be a good, when you're thinking of the man who is keeping us down.
It's Popovich Popovich is the man.
Yes. He's odd though, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but he's so the man, he's so orderly.
He's got a gravitas to him.
He's in the army.
He's got a hard-bitten coachiness.
And he was in the military. He's an ex-military who's gone into private. I like Popovich.
Sure.
But he is the man through and through.
It's true. I guess you have to have charisma to be a coach, huh? It's hard to be a charismaless coach.
Probably.
Jackson had charisma. He had that much. But his charisma might have been too predicated on dividing people and, you know, predicated on saying to a select group that I have your back, they don't, and that can only go so far.
You mentioned Barnes and Jackson.
Oh, yeah, I don't think Barnes and Jackson got along too well. I don't think Barnes would ever say it. I don't think he would ever admit that, but he was sort of the odd man out in that locker room culture, as was Andrew Bogut. And I don't think I'm breaking news when I say that either.
Oh, yeah, I think everybody knows that.
And it's funny when Bogut says that the media makes it like, you know, we didn't get it. Like, dude, you're leaking. You're hatred of Jackson is seeping out of you in quote after quote. Isn't it funny when players do that, where they get their message out and then they try to distance themselves away from it and they blame the media? Example being LeBron and the whole Kevin Love tweet thing. I guess that's a convenient way to sort of have a buffer between you and what you're trying to put out there.
I've been thinking about Lillard's relationship to the press lately.
Yeah, what is his relationship to the press?
They love him.
He's cool. Lillard is undeniably cool.
I've spoken to reporters about this, and they are like, we love him because he's awesome copy. Mm-hmm. And so he'll come in, and he performs a play of himself.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Where he's like, weird. I'm underrated, I'm this, I'm that.
It's great when they know when they're in on their own.
I think he's definitely in it.
It's contrived, but that's almost better. That Kobe was so contrived made Kobe such a good character.
Yeah, Kobe is the liarest liar.
Yeah.
Jordan might have really acted like that.
Kobe is giving us a betrayal. He's acting as Jordan in this very contrived, very conscious way. And some might hear this and think that's an insult. I don't think it is. I think it's a really interesting choice by an artist.
Yes.
And Lillard is doing that with the underrated and Oakland.
Yeah, yeah. Oakland, everything about him is.
And Steph's thing is, I'm just a nice guy, I feel.
In the contrast that got drawn for me when I was speaking to somebody about it was that, Lillard is is a performer who says I'm underrated, and Aldridge is just like, I'm just here to do my job. He's just quiet. He's just quiet. I'm just here to do my job. He doesn't want to mess with people's emotions or people's perceptions in that way.
Do the Blazers have a Draymond Green figure? Is that Wes Matthews?
Yeah,
Wes. That would
Wes,
be it?
For sure.
I like these analogs. I like it. And then
Wes is also great. He's like great copy.
He's great copy too. I believe that. I need to check out that team. The Blazers are. I don't know what to do with the Blazers because they're good, but I haven't invested much time in them because they're more or less good at the things the Warriors are good at. They're similar to the Warriors.
They are.
But then that makes me less inclined to try to dig in and see what makes them tick.
Their bench kind of stinks.
Yeah.
There are a lot of players on there who are like slightly worse versions. Lillard really is just a sort of slightly worse version.
I didn't want to say it. It would have.
Oh, no, I'll say it.
Yeah.
Look, no one else will.
Yeah.
But he does a lot of the same things Curry does. He can pull up off a dribble off a pick, which is an incredibly potent.
Yeah, and he could be the next guy who commands the defense to guard him differently with that. It's almost like he needs to shoot 2% better on those to make that happen. It's a very thin margin between now and forcing the defense to guard him differently on high pick.
Yeah, he's a scoring point guard. The rest of the defense is motion. Yeah, it's pretty similar.
I like how that offense moves, how it just sort of circles around LaMarcus like a bunch of, I want to say border collies, but I get a lot of shit for once joking that could we teach a border collie to play defense? And now people are like, you think a dog can play defense? Like, I don't seriously think that. I'm not a crazy person.
Ethan, if I could get one more theory of that level out of you today, I will regard this podcast as the most unqualified. I listened to that podcast and I was like, this doesn't make any sense. I'm into it.
Could we teach a giraffe to block shots with his neck? I don't know why it has to be a he. I mean, I'm all for gender.
Well,
equality.
Because of the. It's the NBA.
Yeah, it's the NBA, obviously. Otherwise, it'd be ridiculous.
Come on.
Otherwise, it'd just be, it'd be a total. Be heresy otherwise.
If you could you just put a uniform on a blue whale and stick them on the court?
I mean, there is a team called the Blue Whales in China. I would like
Szechuan
to see them,
Blue Whales.
Yeah, I'd like to see them take this to a new level.
That sounds fair.
And kill a very confused blue whale in the name of basketball.
That sounds like a very CBA story.
Just the blue whale will be so good. He just, why is this happening? I'm out of water. There are screaming fans. This is a nightmare.
I don't think you would even know if they were fans.
Screaming humans. I don't understand.
You know what? I'm going to amend that even. A blue whale doesn't have a concept of a human. When does a blue whale see a human?
That's a good point. He might know that they're, kind of mammalian, that there are creatures in this stadium with bright lights and everything else. But, no, it would be a tragedy. I don't think I'm signing off on this particular use of an animal on a basketball court. But that's a good question. What animal would you like to see on a basketball court if you had to choose one?
Oh, my God.
Maybe playing against the team you don't like, so a death wouldn't.
I was at the Natural History Museum today.
Yeah,
and I was looking at the dioramas.
Yeah,
and there's this one diorama that depicts an Alaskan bear.
Uh-huh.
And this thing is huge.
Uh-huh.
This is a big, scary bear. I would like to see that bear.
Okay, a Kodiak bear. Is that
yes.
a thing?
Yeah.
Did you know that this is a Slate article? Did you know that a grizzly bear, they have trials. For murder, the grizzly bear murders a human in Yellowstone. They actually subject the bear to a trial for whether or not it should be killed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I like it.
Do they? And if they lose, they kill the bear, they don't put him in bear jail?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
I watched a Lassie movie where that happened to Lassie once.
They put Lassie on trial?
Yeah, they did. Oh man, there's so many angles to this. So Lassie lived with Elizabeth Taylor. Taylor's in the movie.
Yeah.
Lassie goes off to war.
Sure,
Lassie becomes a war hero.
Of course.
Lassie comes back. He finds Elizabeth Taylor again. Well, before that, he kills a chicken.
Okay.
Because Lassie is like gone crazy.
PTSD.
I'm not kidding. This is literally a movie about how Lassie has PTSD.
Sure.
He kills a chicken. He barks at Elizabeth Taylor. Elizabeth Taylor goes, no, stop, stop.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard kills a chicken, barks at Elizabeth Taylor, man, I mean, I would just.
Well, you read a lot of Richard Burton by it.
Yeah, yeah.
Elizabeth Taylor hugs Lassie and says, no, stop. And Lassie stops. Then the farmer comes to Elizabeth Taylor's house and says, his dog killed my chicken. And it was that dog. They take Lassie in the court. They find Lassie's ear. They look under Lassie's ear. There's a number. They correspond the number to the military. And then the guy stands in front of the court and he gives a speech where he says, this dog is a war hero.
Is it? I feel like it'd be Jimmy Stewart.
If they could afford Jimmy Stewart, they would have gotten Jimmy Stewart.
I can't do it because I'm sick.
Look inside your heart. He literally says, this dog is a war hero. And he's not so unlike some of our boys who are coming back from the war, who are also going to need a little bit of help adjusting.
I need to see this episode, clearly.
Oh, it's a movie. Yeah, there were Lassie movies. I could talk about Lassie movies literally all day.
I wish that there, if we are talking episodes, I wish that there had been Lassie and the Twilight Zone, that there had been some convergence. Like, they could have used Lassie in a way.
Well, yeah, as people are dying and it turns out it's Lassie.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But it was for a good reason. It turns out Lassie's the angel of death.
If Lassie was like that kid Anthony who put people under the cornfield, if Lassie could do that, that would be fantastic.
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, you need to see that. Oh, my God. It's probably the best Twilight Zone episode. This child, it's a lot like James Doe, to bring him back to the NBA.
Okay.
This child has way too much power and his psychic abilities and has the ability to just kill people with the snap of his fingers, so this entire town of people is in quaking fear of him and constantly complimenting him and like, okay, that's fantastic. Whatever you want is great. And it's, I would recommend that episode highly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you seen James Dolan anywhere?
In person?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen him anywhere.
Damn.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you caught a sense of his aura.
I wish I had, but he's such an unsubstantial looking man that I might have seen him and just not seen him, you know?
Oh my god. He's in this cafe playing blues. So you're how many times have you gone to cover the All-Star Weekend?
When it was in LA, 2010 maybe, and then a big gap, and so this is my first one in a half decade. Cool. Essentially.
What do you do? What are you looking for while you're here?
I don't know. It is such, someone described it to me as a bad acid trip, and I don't think that's far from the truth, because there are multiple events and multiple locations, a lot of crass branding and advertisements.
Did you go to the NBA house thing?
No, I don't go to any, I'm not cool enough to get invited to any of these things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did. That's another thing. Well, they know. They know I would just complain about it like I complained about New York, you know, earlier, so I'm not invited.
You're on the misanthrope list.
Man, I don't know if I should share this in this podcast. I don't know if I should share the thing I was invited to. I'm so tempted, though. I want to be real. I want to be honest.
Go ahead.
Oh, God. Okay.
We'll give you a second to think about it.
Okay, so there was an opportunity to interview Steph Curry one-on-one.
Oh, okay.
But here's the catch. He was going to be dressed up as Sebastian Curry of State Farm. Which I think obviously I couldn't do, because that's not exactly the type of thing that I do.
So
for somebody else, that's fine.
Going to answer questions as Sebastian Curry?
Okay. Yes, this was the idea. Part of me really wanted to do this. I mean, I've never seen Steph play a character of kinds in all the times I've interviewed him. But at the same time, it's for a company, and they probably wouldn't want it to be subversive, and they probably wouldn't want me to be making fun of it. They probably wouldn't want me grilling him and going, so what? How does an insurance agent actually help you? Sebastian, can you explain that to me?
What is, are you sure you're not just trying to get money out?
Yeah, are you sure you're just not trying to bilk people who are just scared? Is that the case? You know, can you explain that? So
wait, does he answer questions about Steph Curry as Sebastian Curry, but also using
insurance
metaphors?
And you're supposed to be like, when did you get your first assist? And I think that's what's going on.
I read something Beckley wrote about going to a branding thing and shooting with Steph Curry recently.
Yeah, it was it a degree? I think it was a degree thing that he did.
So that's like a big thing is that they get out to.
But Beckley works. You know, Beckley's like a modern madman. He's very successful at it. So I think that was partially through his job. And you can do
like he was like totally disclosing there was a branding opportunity.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So is that like a really common thing with players, or?
I think it is increasingly, just because access is so rare that if you can trade some access or some promo, you do it. I think in this instance, it just maybe goes a little too far. Where,
yeah.
You know, I might show up to an Under Armour event when Curry is unveiling a shoe. I haven't, but I might.
Yeah.
And just ask him a few questions, ask him about the shoe. Sneaker culture is huge. That would make sense.
I personally would feel uncomfortable asking about the shoe. I can't speak for you.
Well, I would just because I don't know much about shoes.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a tough thing to balance. And, you know, I was thinking, would I lose credibility? And then that was followed by another thought. Do I have credibility? I don't know. I just don't know.
Wow. That's weird.
What?
I don't know. The branding thing. It's odd. It's an odd convergence thing. Yeah.
That's the thing. It's just there are a bunch of trains flying from different directions at each other and colliding when it comes to this weekend. And there's Adam Silver is going to speak a State of the Union on how the NBA is doing, and he's going to be asked questions. And so that's part of this.
How do you get into that?
And then there's an NBA Players Union. Well, you know, the press credential. Why? What do you want to ask Adam Silver?
I would be more curious just to sit around and watch it, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a question for Adam Silver.
Do you think
the D-League is a good idea is probably what I would say.
I'd probably ask him about the falling ratings that the NBA is experiencing, but I don't know if anybody actually cares about that. I don't think most NBA fans care about how popular the NBA is.
I don't. I've heard you talk about this before.
Yeah, I don't think most people care.
I don't.
Yeah. I care, but I can't explain why. It's really irrational.
Do you think it's because it's tied to your income, the popularity of the...
Yeah, but it's not so one-to-one that it would make sense to care about it.
Yeah.
I think I've just got some sort of evangelist for basketball component of my personality that wants it to conquer and wants it to best other sports. I don't know why. It's stupid.
You on occasion will make the argument that college basketball drains ratings from the NBA.
I firmly believe that. Yeah. I think that, and that's fine for college basketball. I think they have a good thing going with their partnership, but to me it looks totally irrational for the NBA to keep this business afloat.
I just don't think that college basketball people cross over to the NBA for reasons that don't have to do with talent and players.
Yeah, I would agree with that for the most part, but I think that there is in the Venn diagram a crowd of people both sports are vying for. But yes, you are right that the typical NCAA fan is not a typical NBA fan. Yeah. NBA fan, younger, more diverse. NCAA, older, whiter, which might be why the NBA is so helpful to the NCAA. It's because perhaps owners of NBA teams are in that demographic and just might be huge college basketball fans and they want to keep it afloat just because they enjoy it.
You went to the celebrity game last night?
I did.
I watched on television. Robert Parra is unnervingly good at basketball.
Yeah, he's not getting his props today. I feel this is a bigger story. We all wanted to laugh at him wanting to play Tony Allen. He was... He couldn't go both hands on his layups. He was favoring one hand on those layups, if I'm having to pick him apart. And we didn't see a lot of long-range shots from him. But other than that, very good.
Yeah, he's like he drives in, he clears out space with his elbow, and he lays it up
with
his hand.
He was so good that I was offended that Kevin Hart won the MVP, even though fans
were... All right.
I know. Then I realized that none of it matters.
Do you feel like the press should choose the celebrity game MVP?
I feel like it doesn't actually matter. I just don't understand what Kevin Hart is doing. He's just screaming constantly throughout the game, and it's obnoxious, but then part of me kind of wondered if I liked it. He wins you over, he erodes your soul to the point where you just accept Kevin Hart.
I heard Draymond Green does a lot of yelling.
Yeah, definitely.
Is Kevin Hart a little Draymond Greeny?
I think they play too differently to be compared.
That's true.
I think they both like to talk, they both like to yell, but Draymond is all about making the little plays, and Kevin Hart is all about having the ball in his hands and having people look at him.
When Draymond Green strips a guy out of an isolation, are you?
Oh, what?
Are you signaling me?
No, I'm not signaling you. I have a cold,
okay.
So I'm just like reflexively.
Here's the signal.
Oh, the signal of the temple.
Here's the signal.
We have a signal, guys. We have a secret signal that I'm supposed to send when the interview is wrapping up.
Yeah.
I might just start trying to fake you out. I might just start try put it up and then pull it back down. And just keep on your toes. I don't know.
Well, you talked about your legendary pump fakes.
Oh, yes. Yes, it all ties into that. It's a good callback.
When Draymond Green blows up in isolation, that's a crazy thing to watch.
It's awesome. I mean, if you talk about...
Dude, who else does that even?
And I don't want to make an analog from human beings to animals, but when we talk about bears on the basketball court, it's very bear-like.
Yeah.
He's got just this energy to it, and it's the best is when he does those two-fisted steals, where the guy has the ball in isolation, and Draymond just wrenches it like the jaws of life. And it's one of the coolest plays.
I was going through his steals on the site, and he did it to Rudy Gay 3 times in one game.
Yeah, yeah.
That is an unbelievable move.
And I feel a lot of getting a steal is just being assertive and confident, and the refs will respect it. And if you kind of do it and you pull your hands away or you poke at it and then you look guilty, then you're going to get hit with a foul. But if you do it the way Draymond Green does it, which is this ball is mine and I'm goddamn taking it, that's going to work more in your favor.
Do you think he's legitimately a defensive player of the year kind of guy?
Yeah, I do. Guards, nearly every position out there, integral to their heavy switching scheme. Certain guys he might not be able to guard because they're too big and too strong, but then he can guard point guards. You can just fit him wherever you need him. The Warriors are the best defensive team this season. He's their most important defensive player.
You think he's more important than Bogut in that regard?
Well, I would say that Bogut was out for a month, and in that month, the Warriors outperformed every defense in the league. They're obviously better with Bogut. I think they need Bogut to go deep in the playoffs, but Draymond Green is the number one reason for why they're the number one defense.
Okay.
Yeah. Hot take.
Well, it wasn't that hot.
I mean, nobody... Yeah.
Can you even have a hot take about defense? What's the hottest take you could possibly
have? I feel like,
you
know what?
Defense?
I mean, here's my hot take on hot takes. I feel like we don't have enough of them, and now we've sort of stigmatized having an opinion that runs contrary to what everybody's saying, as now you have a hot take, so therefore you're just doing it for attention.
When I sit down to write one, I can't. It's not in
me. Oh, you plan your hot takes?
What?
You plan your hot takes?
No, it's just when I sit down, I just can never write anything decisive, ever.
I mean, that's probably a good quality for a person to have.
It's an okay quality for a writer, though.
Yeah.
That's such a thing in writing.
But I think with social media right now, there's a lot of pressure to not go away from whatever the consensus opinion is. There's a lot of social pressure digitally to do that. And so, I mean, so do you have any hot takes roiling inside you that you would be afraid to share?
Oh, Aldridge is boring.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. You shared it earlier then. Okay, good. Thank God.
Like that's my hottest take.
I think
take.
Your hot take was Aldridge is boring. Mine was that New York.
Aldridge is boring, and it's starting to get dumb that he doesn't take threes.
Yeah, I agree. So Aldridge is boring. New York is overrated. I think those are two hot takes.
Look, I don't know. If I would live here if I liked theater just a little more.
Yeah.
I've gone to some plays. That's great.
This is why I can't enjoy it. I think I'm a Philistine. That's why.
Oh, you're a Philistine?
Philistine. You know, not literal Philistine from the Bible.
What is the hoity-toityest thing you enjoy, Ethan?
Oh. Is it the Slate Culture Gab Fest?
Oh, boy.
What?
I don't know. That's not particularly hoity-toity.
That was the first thing that popped into my mind. I can't think of anything. I think I just might be culturally stupid. I think that's what's happening here.
Look, I'm not here to cast aspersions.
I mean,
I go to museums.
You go to museums.
I go to plays.
You go to plays. I go, I get very bored. I feel like I have some sort of attention span problem where if I'm at a musical, I feel I'm trapped like a rat. I start clawing at my skin. I just feel I try to change the channel.
What was the last musical you went to?
Oh, I went to the Book of Mormon.
Okay.
Which was an album I downloaded and loved. I loved every song on it. But even then, I was super bored, and I never told my wife to be about it. She was so excited to go. She had such a great time.
Was it the touring performance?
Yeah, they're in San Francisco.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But secretly, deep down, I just wanted to get out of there.
Oh.
Yeah. And I love the Book of Mormon. I don't know what it is. There's something about the medium. I can't suspend disbelief in that context. I just want to just raise my hand and go, you're people on stage. You're people on stage. This is not.
This is a weird thing to talk about. I studied theater for a long time. And when I watch it, I always accept the disassociation.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I just say, well, yeah, there are people on stage, and it's not real.
But you buy in. I think I have an inability to abstract. I have some sort of lack of imagination that prevents me from just getting lost.
Do you think that attracts you to sports?
Yeah, because it's as fake as it all is.
It's real.
It's unpredictable.
That was the thing. I got into sports later in life, and that was the thing that really attracted me to it in my brain, is that it's a thing that's not being engineered. Like, yeah. The things that are beautiful
about it, nobody knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. The things that are beautiful about it aren't engineered on purpose. They're engineered out of necessity.
Exactly.
To an arbitrary construct.
But you know what's weird is I can't appreciate improv either. And my friend I'm staying with is a comedy writer. He's on a house team at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. And
I'm also staying with comedy writer friends.
Yeah, well, we're staying in Brooklyn, so that's everybody's...
Everyone in Brooklyn is a comedy writer.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone in Brooklyn is a comedy writer. But when I go, unless I'm seeing my friend, where I have a very vested interest in how he's doing and what he's doing, I can't buy the realities they're constructing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I can't do it.
That's interesting.
And I was awful. I took an improv class. I was terrible.
I was okay. I was bad at other parts of it.
Well, I think my problem is listening. You need to be a good listener.
Yeah, that was what I was bad at.
And if I'm already a bad listener, so once the adrenaline starts pumping in front of people, there's just no way.
I always wanted to fix it. I always wanted to fix something. That was me, is that I couldn't, like... Writing's so much better because you can...
Yeah.
You're in control of it all. But like being on stage is just like, I want to make this work. But you can't think like that. You just have to think, what's
you
behind
have to
the wall?
Accept the reality and just build something with them. And I just can't lose myself in things. That's the thing. I can't lose myself in anything. I can't wear a costume on Halloween and go, I'm this. I just don't feel that way. I'm not that.
I don't think it... Does anybody do that?
I mean, I think Zach Harper does. I think Zach Harper believes he's the thing he dresses up for on Halloween.
What does he dress... Like a dinosaur?
I don't know. He loves dressing up. That's all I know. He loves it, and this is a dichotomy between us that we talk about. I can't even specifically remember what he dresses up as, perhaps because he so embodies the characters he dresses up as that I can't even remember it was him.
Thank you for speaking with me today, Ethan.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Ethan. You can follow him on Twitter at Sherwood Strauss. Read his work over at ESPN.com. Follow me on Twitter at Corbina Smith, that's CorbinaSmith. And I can't wait to speak to you the next time I do one of these.